Hello and welcome to Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. My name is Victor Sosa, joined, as always, by the legend Les Thatcher. Two folks who had absolutely, positively zero plans on going out and doing any Black Friday shopping in person. I did do that once or twice many years ago, Les, but actually one of them wasn't even to go shopping. I'm just, you know, normally up at that hour because of my job. And one year I actually had taken both Thanksgiving and Black Friday off. I think it might be the only time I'd ever done that. And just because my body clock is what it is, and I couldn't sleep in the middle of the night because that's normally when I'm up anyway, I just drove around to see if the parking lots were really that full and if it was that insane. And it was every bit the circus that people have talked about on the news for so many years.
This may be a little insane the next hour if you spend with Vic and I, but it won't be nearly as insane as trying to get in and buy things from all these insane ladies that are out shopping today. I think I've just mentioned it again here a number of years ago. My wife decided that we should try Black Friday. And long story short, we went to the Walmart and we were inside not 10 minutes, my cell phone rings, and it's my wife. She said, "What department are you in?" I said, "I'm over in electronics." I forget where she was. She said, "These aisles, meet me such as, and let's get out of here." So that was it. My 10-minute run of Black Friday. So, yes, let's don't ever do that again. Excuse me. No. But did you eat too much yesterday?
Well, I mean, unfortunately, since the pandemic started, that's every day for me. But yeah, definitely a little too much, but there's more than enough leftovers for me to continue committing that same crime all weekend long.
All right. Well, I don't have any leftovers, but yes, overeating is a family tradition for Thanksgiving Day, is it not?
It is, yes.
And of course, you know, years ago, when I was still wrestling and when the territories were flourishing, you couldn't afford, if you were a wrestler, you couldn't afford to eat overeat on Thanksgiving because your ass would end up leaving it in the ring that night if you did. But yeah, those were fun. I can't say that they were not. And, you know, it's, you always knew that it was going to be a big house on Thanksgiving and a big house on Christmas. And as some of the promoters would say, well, you know, Thanksgiving, you're doing, it's a public service. What are you talking about? Well, you know, you're with all these people. You know they're your relatives, but you don't really know them. Don't know what to say to them or one of them's driving you nuts. So, hey, I got tickets to wrestling matches. See you later. They're gone.
So. Hey, in addition to Thanksgiving being a bigger house, did you find that the weekend was more lucrative as well? Were there bigger houses in the Friday and Saturday towns?
It was. It was more of a festive thing, I think. But, well, Christmas was that way, too. Like, mostly for Christmas. You might run a big show, after Thanksgiving or maybe one earlier in the week, you know, but yeah, I think, fans, you know, especially with regular wrestling fans, people that were serious about their fandom. They look forward to it as well, I think. So yeah, it was a great tradition and like so many, those are all gone. And, I remember as a kid, my dad had three brothers, so we always ended up, if it wasn't at our house, it was one of the other three brothers at their home. It was Thanksgiving, and then one of the brothers had Christmas. So it was always people all over the place, right? So those are great memories, but we're old now, Vic. And
yes, we are.
I can name
at least one person who could not wait for Thanksgiving to get down to a meal, and that was Kenny Omega on Wednesday night. We'll talk about all things Dynamite in a little bit, because I'm afraid once we go down that road, we may never come back. So we'll start today with NXT, but before we even get there, let us take this opportunity to send our condolences to Brian Last, who lost his dad the other day.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm sorry that I haven't said anything earlier. And Brian, if you happen to listen to us, I'm so sorry that I haven't sent you an email message or something, but I was just finding that out today. And yes, our sympathies, our hearts, heartfelt condolences go out to Brian and his family for the loss of his father. This is a hell of a week. And as I mentioned to you before we started recording, my mother passed away on Thanksgiving Day in the year 2000. So it's a little bittersweet for me as well. But yeah, our best goes to Brian and his family, no doubt.
So we appreciate you taking some of your holiday weekend, if you do in fact celebrate Thanksgiving, to spend a little bit of it here with us. And we're going to get to some professional wrestling discussion here, Les. And thank goodness somebody took notes about what's gone on this week, because I don't know what my deal has been, but I was MIA. So normally I send Les a list of topics or interesting stories or things I think might be fun to discuss, and I do that early on Friday morning. I did not work today, which is normally why I'm sending less emails at 3:30 a.m. with a topic list. And because of that, for the most part, I did not get a chance to really go through a whole lot of the news and comb through it looking for stuff to talk about as I normally do. But Les both shocked and impressed me earlier today when I called, because he said he had taken notes on both NXT and Dynamite. So I'm going back up and let you talk about NXT.
Well, you know what? I saw, to me, the high spots on NXT, Carmelo and Wesley probably had the best match of the night. And maybe one of the best matches I've seen on that show in a few weeks as well. And it went well. Wesley hung on to his title, and which was all well and good. But also, at the end, the return of Chris Dijak.
Yes,
who has got a different look, and I'm a fan. For those who don't know, Chris has trained with me on several occasions. We have a good relationship, and I think he will help that company. He's a hell of a good heel, very agile for a man his size, and I think he will add to the mix as well. And I think in watching that too, it's some of the gimmicks are just so, they're sophomoric or childish necessarily, but they're unbelievable. The whole Chase U thing, there is no college in NXT. We know that. He's not a professor. We know that. Those people aren't, they're students of wrestling. We know that, but not of anything. You know, so the whole gimmick is to me a waste of time and effort when you could take those people and try to build them something that's a little more serious. The group that Gacy, I think, is the group that Rock's daughter is with. Now, they had a table set up, and there's four people, and they each, you know, they wear their mask, and then they each take a mask off, and they each have a scripted promo about, you know, so it's part Ultimate Warrior type, you know, where it's about the gods and this and that. And it's some of it, you're going to say, what the hell are they talking about? But the point is, it takes the four people, and it's nothing really that is compelling to draw you in or to make you turn off. You're sitting there waiting for something that's meaningful. And I, you know, to me, it fills time, but it's, I don't think it gets them over necessarily, nor does it me as a fan make me dislike them more or want to be a fan of theirs in one way or the other. And then at the end of this, they have Rock's daughter go out into the audience, and obviously it's a trainee from the PC that she picks. But this guy comes in, and then Gacy gives him some crazy pitch, you know, about who he is or wasn't or should be. And then he puts him through the table that they're sitting around. And the reaction was basically the reaction I'm getting from you or myself, right? I mean, it was, they filled time. And of course, your favorite, Wendy Chow, was on the show. And there's some good women there. The girl that Ivy Nile worked with, I see potential there. There's some good people. And like I say, I think, there's something to build from. It's just some of these gimmicks are so crazy. And, you know, again, they fill time and they give names to people, but I don't know that they take you anywhere. And that's the biggest problem, I think. You know, and I've hit upon this before, but I also sat here and was thinking, too, back, you know, we talk about, man, when I thought TNA was the show, this is the one I want to watch. We're watching now a bunch of trainees, basically. You have to look at it that way. And the NXT that I'm talking about, realize how already experienced the people, Undisputed Era. My God, each one of those guys had worked as a top guy on the independents. Samoa Joe, top guy on the independent. Nakamura, top guy in Japan. Tim Thatcher, top guy on the indies and in Europe. On and on and on. But so, really, in a way, I'm being unfair, or anybody else, when we're looking at this particular version of NXT and saying, well, they're not as good as those guys were 3 or 4 years ago. No, they're not, nor should they be, because they aren't that experienced. Am I making sense, I hope?
Would you say, then, that the numbers they're getting by themselves on Tuesday night in that 6 to upper 6 range and occasionally breaking into the 7s for the specials and stuff, maybe even more impressive than what they were doing with that crew a few years ago?
Yeah, I'd say that's pretty decent considering everything, you know? And like I say, there is a bunch that I don't want to watch that's on NXT. Now I know Bron Breakker and what's his next big title run? I'm having a senior moment.
The guy they just brought in from NXT UK, JD McDonagh?
Yeah. No, him and your favorite who's no longer wearing a Daishi gear.
Apollo Crews. Are they not going to make that? Wait. I'm just trying to, they just had a three-way, right? They're not making this another one, are they?
No, I don't, not that. It appeared that it's just going to be Cruz and Breaker.
Got it.
Which should be a hell of a match.
Yes.
But my friend Jim called my attention, and I think this is one of the problems with the industry as a whole now. And he's saying, well, here's Apollo Crews, who's no longer has an African accent, who is no longer innate, you know, why not? And I mentioned Dijak, who has gone through 3 incarnations. My sense, and again, I have no way of proving what I'm about to say, but I feel it. I truly feel it. That every time you switch a person's persona, gimmick, call it whatever you like, character, if that person actually is a drawing power for you, you're diminishing that drawing power a bit. Because the person who you built to give them that drawing power, you got to realize that's not going to be the same person or the same gimmick. I don't think Seth friggin' Rollins. God, if I don't ever hear him say friggin' again, I'll be all right. How many gimmicks is, how many different, you know, and the current one, I could live without forever. But, you know, I realize it's like movies. In a way, because, you know, you can see a great actor who's won an Academy Award, but you can also see him in a bad flick. The good thing about that is the bad flick goes away, or you don't have to go see it. That's not the case with a bad gimmick on a good wrestler. You're stuck with it because somebody came up with that idea that's got a stroke, and they're going to push that until you, you know. L.A. Knight. Whether he went to bat for himself or somebody else, but I had heard that he was unhappy with that whole Maximum Models thing. And I don't blame him. It was bad. And he was able to get bailed out, but he would have died a horrible death there if that had continued. So I just, you know, I sat and it wasn't like this. It hadn't crossed my mind before, but it's just like, or it wasn't epiphany, but I just thought, yeah, it's something we need to mention, you know, that the difference in the basic talent that we're seeing now and we saw years ago, but also in changing the characters around so often on the same show. I guess maybe I ate too much turkey, you think?
No. I think that unfortunately for a number of those talents, it's not the case in every single person, but with a couple of them that you named, and probably a few more we could think of if we were going through roster lists, that Paul Levesque was left with the rather unenviable task of trying to take some talented people and trying to wipe the slate clean with them after they've already been exposed by the previous administration in gimmicks that really just didn't go anywhere. And you don't want to cut the person because you understand that there's talent there. You also understand that they probably have endless amounts of room on Wednesday nights for somebody if you ever see them again, but they'll still be getting paid. And so you want to try and figure out how to make the best of the situation that you have. And you end up in the situation where Paul Levesque is having to take guys like Apollo Crews back down to NXT and start over. And again, as you mentioned with Dijak, and I'm glad that they're starting over with him too, because these are two guys who have a lot to offer that really haven't had the best of opportunities in terms of the way they were presented by Vince.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. And, you know, that's, again, somebody who's saying, about our business that, well, this guy is getting a push. He's not really the best. I said the problem with that is our business is subjective. Baseball, football, pro basketball are not subjective. Either you're good at it or you're not. And you get pushed if you're good. And if you're not, you get left by the wayside. But there are a lot of wrestlers that are not mechanically as talented as some who don't get pushed, but are being pushed for whatever reason. Their look, they have good presence, they talk well, they're good athletes, but, you know, it's being subjective makes it a much, much tougher to score big and much, much tougher to come up with the right combination of people. And sometimes you're wrong.
Well,
except you're never wrong.
Well, of course not. let's take this opportunity to let everybody know, after the turkey has been eaten and any promoters who've got some shows planned around the country this weekend start to reset early next week, where they can get a hold of you for bookings, training, seminars, and then we'll jump into what everybody's been talking about this past Wednesday on Dynamite.
Okay, yeah. You can reach me very simply, lesthatcher28@gmail.com. And I do one-day seminars or weekend training camps. To be honest, I prefer the weekend camps because I can accomplish more over 2 days, as well as the kids can learn more over the 2 days. But you can reach me at that email address. I'll be more than happy to send you out the information, the cost, and what I do and how we do it and so forth and so on. And would love to hook up with you. And yes, I enjoy doing these. I feel like I'm giving back. And if you need a reference, you can go to some of the top trainers in the country, like Tom Pritchard, Rudy Gonzalez, Lance Storm, Rip Rogers. They get a reference. You can go to Jim Ross if you'd like for a reference. You can go to Lance. I said Lance Storm already, didn't I? But you can also go to wrestlers like Adam Cole. Nigel McGuinness, who's no longer wrestling, but find Eric Chris Hero, and so you get a reference from people, young guys, old guys, or in between guys. But yeah, drop me a line. I'd be more than happy to send you out the information.
You just reminded me. Storm probably had a real nice, healthy Thanksgiving meal, and he's already walked it off twice. Bastard.
Who?
Lance.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's probably hiking in the freaking mountains outside of Calgary, isn't he? Bless his heart. I wish we could get him up early enough to get him on the show.
We'll have to get back on that. So today, obviously, a lot of people have been talking about it for the last few days. Probably we'll continue to talk about it for a few more. It's our opportunity to weigh in on all things Dynamite. You took some notes on the show, which we'll get to. And I know that there are at least two things in your notepad that will shock, I think, a lot of regular listeners of this program in terms of things I would expect most people would think you would hate, and instead you rather enjoy them, at least for the most part. But we'll get to that in a second.
But one of the things I want you to get, before we start on Dynamite,
okay,
I want you to get your detectives out and searching. And I've heard that there is an internet battle going on between our Dave Meltzer and Billy Corrigan. And I'd love to know what that's about.
I would assume if anything, it was probably about crowning Tyrus as the NWA champion and some of the comments that were made online about that. But I was just, you know, spitballing here, scrolling, I should say, real quick before we got started. And I didn't see anything from either Dave or Billy on their respective Twitters. I may not have scrolled down far enough for Dave in the time we had before we got started today, but I didn't catch anything there that went back and forth, but which doesn't mean they didn't. You know, it's possible they deleted those tweets or something like that. But yeah, I would assume that that was, if there was an issue between the two of them, that was it.
I would assume that probably might be it as well. I'd be curious to see what that was all about, though, because I don't know what, I know Corrigan, real quickly, what the whole idea was, well, Tyrus is on Fox News, so that's good for us. It's not good for you if he's not talented in the ring, and he's not. I mean, I'm not saying you can't, you know, work him into the in with guys, but to be your world champion, and the other thing is, if you're still trying to keep any semblance of respect and honor with an NWA world title, then you need to be very careful who you put it on, and this would not be the guy. I don't know the guy. It's not personal. And, you know, if you made him a tag, one half of a tag team championship and gave him a partner who could work their ass off, he could still brag about that on Fox News. But I just, to somebody who grew up with the NWA title and has wrestled NWA champions and who has been a part of the NWA for so long, to me, it just lacks any semblance of respect for the title and for those who wore it before, you know. So, whatever. But anyway, if our detectives find out anything, we'll bring the information to you. All right. Now, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but you were on a roll. Go ahead.
Yes. Well, obviously, there were some things in the show that you liked that I thought might be unexpected to our listeners that I'm looking forward to getting into with you here in a few. But let's go ahead and start with the biggest thing that came out of the show, more likely than anything else. And that's what happened in the match between the Elite and Death Triangle, part of their best of seven series here for the Trios titles, I beg your pardon. And the story was not the winner of the match, although the Death Triangle, the current champs, are up now 2-0 in that best of seven series. And they had the added bonus of Pentagon having a spare hammer around. That's always handy in order to get the win. But the Elite basically mocking CM Punk in Chicago at just about every turn. And so everybody was watching this match in real time and tweeting about what they were doing as it was going on. And combine that with the Being the Elite episode where they focused on those FCM Punk chants from the previous week. And you look at all of that, and people, by the time we got to Kenny Omega biting someone, were convinced that this has to be a work, that they've figured out how to smooth things over, and that when Punk is cleared from his torn triceps injury, that he'll be returning to the company. And that's a distinct possibility. I don't think you can rule that out after watching what we saw on Wednesday. But when I look at this, and then I put it next to the comments that Kenny Omega made recently about, you know, I think people should let it go, essentially, in the latest edition, actually not the latest edition of Sports Illustrated. It was in, as well, on their website, si.com. And let me just grab a couple of these quotes in case anybody missed it or would like their memory refreshed. Now, I'm going to move around the longer form quote that he gave, but what I'm about to say are all quotes that he gave to si.com. There are things no one can talk about, so I'd encourage people to let it go. I encourage people to move away from it because there's no information to be released. Though I can't talk about it, I want the fans to know that I still want the best for pro wrestling. This isn't Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks against CM Punk. This is people who are trying to showcase their art, essentially, which is something he's, you know, been on for a long time. That's one of his favorite talking points about this being an art, and it is to a great extent. But in watching all of that stuff, I think if it were anybody else who did what they did on Wednesday, I would be convinced also that this has to be a work and that Punk would be coming back. But because of who it is, and this is obviously just my opinion, anyone who's listening to this is free to disagree, but to me, I still have doubt, which may not necessarily be a bad thing, but I still have doubt that it's a work. Only because the question I asked myself was, is this trio big enough a bunch of jerks to actually think that would be funny and heat and ha ha ha, we laugh about it afterwards, in the back after the match? And to me, for me at least, the answer is yes. So I'm not at all convinced that CM Punk is coming back. What do you think?
I'm not at all convinced either. And all the little nitpicky things that went on, I think the climax was Omega biting. And I thought, what a jackass. I did. If it's over and done with, then jackass, leave it alone. And that goes to your two buddies, too. I said to you before we started recording, and Ace Steel is a friend of mine. Punk and I get along. As far as I know, I haven't seen Philip in a long time. But Ace and I still communicate via email. And talk back and forth. And you know what? Since this has happened, what happened at that pay-per-view hasn't even come up. We haven't even talked about it because it's not important in our friendship. But the point is, what I'm going to say now is if Ace were to pass Omega or one of the Jacksons, going through an airport, and he decides to drop them in their tracks right where they're standing and beat the shit out of them. Ace, I'll go your bail, man, because they got it coming. Childish bullshit, yes. Now, with the exception of that, the match was what I expected. It was an athletic, acrobatic exhibition. And I'm thinking, okay, and they're going to have five more of these, or possibly five more.
Yeah.
And it doesn't interest me quite. Yes. Listen, they're doing stuff that I wouldn't try to do or would want to do, and more important, wouldn't need to do to get heat, quite frankly, or to get over. But if it's entertaining to people, I'm cool with all that. And if you are the elite and you are God's known children and Dave thinks you're the greatest thing since sliced bread, and so does your mother and your wife and your kids. Okay, cool. Keep it to yourself, please. Can you do that? I don't know. I agree with you. If it were anybody else, I'd say, okay, yeah, it's probably Punk is probably coming back. But no, I think these guys can be jerks enough that they're insulated, right? Would be my point too. They are who they are and what they are, and they will take advantage of that, and we will hear about it until they decide to retire, I suppose, or I die, one of the two. But, yeah, that was the bad part of that entire show. And when I say bad, I spell it with large B, A, large A, large D, okay? But there were some highlights on that show.
You know what? Before you get to those highlights... Let me ask you one follow-up question regarding the heat and them being jerks and the fact that your reaction was you wanted to knock them on their ass or something like that. So talk to the person who heard you say that and will respond to you, well, isn't that proof that it worked? Isn't that heat? Don't you want that?
Not that kind. No.
Yes.
No, not that kind. I don't think any of this heat is that kind of heat. I know I had people tell me that fight backstage was rigged. I don't believe that, you know? And these three guys live in their own atmosphere, you know, their own world. And they are the kings and queens of that world. And that's the way it's going to be, you know? Are they the first guys to think that they hung the moon? No, they're not. And they won't be the last, but sadly enough, they've got their nose in the right orifices, and so they're going to be able to pick and carry on as much as they want. So, you know, I did want to say, though, that their match without those little bits and pieces it was entertaining. The people were entertained. So okay, but five more. That's my thing. Once I've seen it, I've seen it. There is no, and you know the only thing there too with Pac, I think. And again, I'm not saying he's above the other people in this best of seven deal. I'm just saying his intensity and his in-ring work is being wasted there, because he should be in with Dragon and Moxley and the Cowboy and Adam Cole when he comes back, talents like that should be there to, you know, because his wrestling and his intensity and his work is of that level. And I wouldn't put him with this group. That's all.
So now get to those couple of things that I think people will be surprised to hear that you would regard as a thumbs up on the show.
Okay, well, now you told me that a lot of people didn't like the opening with Regal and Mox and Brian.
Yes.
And I'm going to tell you, I thought it was three pros working their asses off, quite frankly. Let's go back to when Regal shoving the Nux into MJF. And you know what? I listened to Dave and Brian talking about you didn't know it was going to happen. You didn't know it 6 weeks before it was going to happen. Now, I'm not talking about behind the scenes, maybe somebody, but I'm talking about on camera, watching it. And that's what professional wrestlers do, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages. They surprise you. And how often on this show do I say, in this day and age where everyone understands that wrestling is predetermined, et cetera, that the element of surprise is your strongest weapon, and it damn sure was with this. And it was done by pros, right? Regal was where he needed to be. Mox was where he needed to be, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it popped, man. It got everybody. And what this was is takes it a step further. Do the fans want to see Moxley beat the hell out of Regal? Of course they do. He could have done that under the normal AEW, framework, but he didn't, thank God, because that's still something that you want to see as a fan. That means you're going to have to keep watching if you want to see it, and it will happen at some point. But you saw three guys, three pros in that ring. Now, for those who don't know, Brian Danielson was indeed mentored quite a bit by Regal, and he admits to that freely, and he should. He's turned into a hell of a worker because of it. But the point is, it bordered reality more than the trio stuff, right? So everybody just did their part really well. Regal didn't run like you expect a man. This guy's not a manager. He's still in decent shape, and he was a great professional wrestler. So, and then Brian is trying to keep, I know we're going to separate, and he did something bad, but Mox, we've all done, but I love this guy. And the way he played to Mox, pay no attention to the fans. Real things that you would normally do. But the whole opening, it filled time, but it wasn't wasted time. It filled time enhancing the story, carrying the story forward, and giving us something else to think about. Because how will Moxley get the Regal? Will this create a problem between Moxley and the Dragon, et cetera, et cetera? So that's, to me, everybody played their part tremendously well, professionally, and that's why I love these guys. I mean, I don't know how to say it any other way, but it was, their timing was good. Their expressions were good. The way they did it was good. And when Regal walked, it leaves something still that you want to see as a fan. So that's why I thought it was so good. And why people thought it was bad, I'm not really sure.
I think they felt, well, some of the stuff I thought that I saw were wondering about why Bryan Danielson intervened. So I'm glad you brought up the fact that he's been a mentee of Regal's for quite a long time and has been vocal about saying he owes a great deal of his success to Regal, because I'm not sure they did a great job making that clear necessarily. You know, it wasn't a point of reference, nor did it need to be for Danielson in his promo, because that's something somebody with a headset should have said or reminded the people of. But, it was a thing of, well, why is Brian trying to keep this guy from getting his revenge, was the thing I saw most often out of folks who were criticizing that segment.
Right. And, well, because he was torn as well, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, let's say, example, you with two guys you've worked with, and they're having a battle, and yet you're not mad at either one of them. So you know that there's no way that they're going to work together again, but still, you know, you still respect them both, so you don't want anything, you don't want a physical confrontation. But, and you know what? Sometimes when you watch pros work, you just feel how good it is, and you can't really explain it. I don't know if that makes any sense or not either, but that's like when I say, I think that guy's got it, and you may say, what is it? And I'll tell you, I don't know, but I know he's got it, right? So, that's what I saw there on Wednesday night, and I loved every minute of it.
And to me, the other aspect of that is that if you've watched Regal's career, whether you've only, well, actually, you may have been thrown off a little bit if all you saw was the commissioner of NXT. But throughout Regal's career, he's never been shy about the fact that he is a villain. He is a snake. He is not to be trusted. And even though he's gone out of his way to help all of those guys in the Blackpool Combat Club, at the end of the day, you can't blame a snake for being a snake when it bites you. So, you know, we may still owe him a lot, but you can't sit here and tell me, how could you do this? You know who he is.
Right. And for those youngsters that have never seen him work, you can find it on YouTube. You can buy the Brian Pillman Memorial Anthology, which we'll tell you about later. But you're going to see Regal and Benoit, which was one of the matches, best matches of the last 20 friggin' years, 25 years. Take a pick. I use it as a training tool. Dr. Tom used it as a training tool. I'm assuming that probably Lance and Rudy Gonzalez and other great trainers use it as a tool as well, because it was that friggin' good. It was an instructional match, for Christ's sake. And it stole the show, the Pillman show, in the year 2000. So, he's as talented as anybody. And that's what I saw at work, was three very talented pros putting together a story that's solid and going to carry him forward for a few weeks.
So here's the point in the program where Les professes his newfound fandom for Orange Cassidy.
Actually, I saw what, to me, was please don't, I don't want anybody to think I'm drunk or stoned or anything. I'm not. It's too early in the morning for any of those things. To me, the most entertaining Orange Cassidy match that I have seen with Hager. And the hat stupidity was, the hat got over. It's just the two guys did. But the hat's over. They can bring it back next week. He did less nonsensical stuff and more solid stuff. And listen, I'll be the first to admit, the guy, when he wants to work, can. I don't give a damn at all about him and his hands in his pockets or kicking people's shins or his ugliness or his bland look or his sunglasses or any of that other nonsense. But, yeah, so this was the most entertaining for me. And I realize if he backs away from all that stuff, he and I could be compatible. Is that horrible to say?
No, part of the reason the gimmick drives you nuts, or maybe you have a little extra venom in your voice when you talk about stuff with him you don't like, is because you see more.
Yeah, I do. So that match with Hager. But when you see those two guys standing there, you figure Hager should eat his lunch in about 2 or 3 minutes. Shouldn't be any longer than that. And I think with this match, it was more solid than the normal Orange Cassidy matches. So, yeah, that was part of it, too, you know. But, yeah, well, and this show started strong and faded away, but don't most AEW shows do that?
Unfortunately, yes. That has really been a recurring issue.
Yeah, and when the lights went out, I'm thinking, oh, hell. But you know what? When they came back on, I saw something else that I thought, damn, somebody in the back is calling the shots besides the Booker of the Year. Because Black is back, and I thought it was well done. The little girl, the way they costumed her, and she's, you know, she obviously, it's not hard to play her part, but she did it well. And the whole thing to get them over. But like I said to you before we started recording, now here's where I scratch my head, because this is a great way to bring Black back with his faction. But now going forward, you have to maintain that momentum. Will they? There's the question. Because they have, let's face it, let's go back to you know, when they put the belt on a guy who can beat 20 security guys in 2 minutes. But what have they done with him after that? Your answer is well taken.
Exactly. And that was the reason I laid out. I mean, hopefully he's not done with Samoa Joe, because those matches should be interesting, right? And he can learn a thing or two. But from the time he won the championship up until, you know, a week or 10 days ago, the answer was dead air, blank space.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. So it's a great way to bring Black and his faction back, but only if you carry it forward. You know, we were stuck with the Scissors Gang, and which Billy Gunn undressing his hands, I thought was pretty awesome. I'm being facetious.
I know you are.
You know, but that's, I mean, forget, those guys are getting paid, people love them, okay, I can move past it and go on with my life. I thought Starks and Paige had that match was solid. It was a good match. I can live without Starks doing his heel stance, his pose, if he's going to be a baby face, but hey, what do I know? And I'm sorry, I am the Jericho match filled time. It wasn't good. It just, and I am so over. I know they do it in New Japan, but that's in another country, if anyone happened to notice that. I'm just tired of everybody. Let's chop each other 50,000 times, or let's just stand here and punch each other 50,000 times. Nah, let's don't. Okay. If that's all you need to be a professional wrestler, hell, I can go out and draft a bunch of guys off the street and teach them that before dinner. That's not what I'm looking for. Now, if Jericho's opponent, I realize we're talking about, this is a geriatric title match more than anything else.
Yeah, that is, that's not unfair.
And so I realize you have to cut that some slack. But I also realize if I'm booking it, it's not my main event.
You know, I got to be honest, I was surprised that that ended up being the last match. I told some people when we saw the lineup earlier this week that I fully expected Jericho to be as close to the front of the show as he can, where the better numbers are, as opposed to being at the back of the line. But he may have lost that particular political battle with the Bucks. I don't know.
Yeah, there's a deal when all the executives get to battling. Where's my spot? We got to get my spot in first. No. But So the show was just it faded as it went along. But overall, there were some good things, and I hope I covered them. I don't know that I did, but again, you've got to be consistent with these things. You certainly have to be consistent with these things. And I saw a picture this morning, too, of MJF, dad hugging him, and dad, mom, this was after he had beaten John. And that was such a great picture. And I wrote under, you know, I put a note on there that when you realize that you have made your mother and your father proud, then you have accomplished something that's meaningful. It's important. It's maybe one of the most important things you can do in your life. And the second thing is when you realize that they have been there for you throughout the journey as you chased your dream, that is also meaningful and loving and caring and beautiful. And I say this because I had both from my mother and father. They supported my you know, what I did. They showed up as much as they could. And I realized without, you know, that I made them proud. So when I saw that picture, I just, believe it or not, as old and beat up and nasty as I can be, I have sentiment at times as well. And that was one of the things. And let's face it, that kid has got a hell of a future in this business. And I'm going to say right now, without reservation, it may not all be with AEW.
Well, I mean, he certainly talks like he's going to keep all his options open, which I cannot blame him for, because there's nobody with a bigger bottomless. Put it like this, Tony Khan and the Khan family, I should say, may have more money than WWE. I'm not sure anyone's willing to pay more than the folks at WWE, though.
Well, you know what? And he's in a position now. We talked about Dragon using Regal as a mentor, and he's not the only guy that has learned from Regal. I'm going to tell you the truth. So now MJF has a guy whose ear he has, virtually 24/7 for a period of time. It makes sense to use it, man. It really does. Because the kid has got all the foundation of being a hell of a lead heel for somebody. And I think he'll break out of the pack if given the chance.
Backtrack to just an aspect of that Jericho versus Ishii match. It certainly wouldn't have made anybody forget Ric Flair versus Ron Garvin or Ric Flair versus Wahoo McDaniel. But when was the last time you saw somebody get busted open on chops?
Wow, I don't know. At first, I'm thinking, really? Right? Why would he blade himself? But then I'm thinking, wow, yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, I am proud to say I have never been chopped by Wahoo McDaniel. And not afraid to say that, and happy to say that. I have been chopped by Ric Flair, which is not a walk in the park. I've been chopped by Hiro Matsuda, Duke Kiyomuka, Ronnie Garvin, and you sell those suckers. And I'd get up the next morning and I'd see those handprints still on my chest, so I knew who I'd worked with the night before. But yeah. It was a ferocious battle for two old lions, and nobody called them that, but I just came off the top of my head. But yeah, it was two grizzled veterans beating the hell out of each other. I can comprehend that. It's just like I say, it wasn't match of the year. It wasn't meant to be, and it was not the match that I would put on last. One other comment I want to make about I caught the promo. And tonight, FTR actually gets to defend their titles. But the way it happened was so lackluster. And I said to you, one of the problems that I have with championships just being done is there's no drama, there's no build. So how important can they be? And that's what I saw there. FTR is doing an interview, and the brothers walk out and say, hey, you know, we're pretty good, and we did this, and we did that, and FTR said, yeah, we had an eye on you. Well, and we think you're pretty good. Well, if you think we're pretty good, why don't we have a title match? Hey, okay, let's do it Friday night. You have the next hour or the next week or the next lifetime to tell me where the drama and the intrigue and the build came in that particular promo.
None whatsoever. And you talk about how they just walked up. I mean, literally, Top Flight only got back together the previous week in an 8-man with FTR on their team in a match because Dante Dwayne, I believe his brother's name is. Forgive me if I've gotten that wrong, Mr. Martin, but had just come back after an injury. He had a car wreck. So thank goodness he's obviously well enough to get back in the ring. But, you know, they come back after months apart as a team. They win one 8-man match. And now they get a title match, and FTR says, yeah, we've had our eye on you. When? The guy's been home.
Yeah, it's watch what you're saying in a promo and what, you know, this you can't take, this is a standardized build here, Vic, so we can say this is our promo for every build. No, it's not. Everything is different in your, and here's the other thing, too, for those listening to us. If Vic caught these discrepancies, if I caught some, and somebody else caught them as well. And the whole idea is that shouldn't be there. If you're going away from your promo, leaving the people with anything, it would be I need to see this because I'm not sure what's going to happen. Or I need to tune in next week because this sounds exciting. But again, it was just a conversation between the two teams, and it was nothing special about it, is my point. And that's something that is lacking in the industry currently. And that's one of the reasons that titles don't seem to be as important. And one of the reasons that backing up onto the start of this particular hour is why NXT was so exciting a number of years ago. Because once you won that title, you hung with it for a period of time. Or we can go back even further to the beginning of Ring of Honor. This is when Punk, Nigel, Joe, Jamie, no, when those guys, well, no, Jamie only had a short time because he went back to WWE. But those guys had the title for a period of time, and it meant the longer they hung on to it, the more it meant. So, yeah, there's a lot of credence to that, whether you like it or you don't.
One last important programming note for anybody who does want to see this week's edition of Rampage featuring that FTR match versus Top Flight, which I do think is an intriguing matchup. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's an interesting clash of styles, and to see how they manage to work that out and work through it is something that it actually interests me quite a bit. But if you want to see Rampage tonight, you're going to have to do it, well, this afternoon. There's an NHL doubleheader.
In about 3.5 hours,
yes,
actually.
As we record this. There's an NHL doubleheader on TNT. So this week's edition of Rampage, if you're listening to this and among the first to check it out on a Friday, Rampage Day is at 4 p.m. Eastern. So if you have not already restructured your DVR or whatever you're using to watch it or record it, if you're not going to be around at that particular point in time, make sure you set it for 4 o'clock on TNT because that's when Rampage is going to be happening.
Yes, sir. I've set mine, and you know what reminded me was Wednesday night. I said, really? Oh, wow, I better do that. But yes, so yeah, but so, wow. I'm just, you know, I think from the black faction being back, you know, there's some good things happening here. And the whole Regal MJF thing is going to be beautiful because because of the talent involved. And I would assume that there'll be, you know, something is going to happen between Mox and Regal at some point as well. I think that the fact that they're teasing that and going to wait, you're going to want it more. And when you see it, you'll be more excited about it, I believe.
Well, I think when you look at this, and we'll wrap with this, you look at the last several weeks of television leading into the pay-per-view that Les and I were not shy about saying left a whole lot to be desired and really did not do that show, which turned out to be one that just about everybody really loved and enjoyed. You know, those TVs didn't do that show any justice. But now when you look at what's been laid out this past Monday, even though we can honestly say we thought the show started strong and faded as it went on, when you take the long view and you see this, as you mentioned, MJF and Regal as a duo and where it goes with the Blackpool Combat Club, you also see Ricky Starks winning that tournament and now getting the next opportunity against MJF. And I can only imagine the wordplay that'll go on between the two of them between now and then. And you look at the idea of Wardlow, who's been largely on ice, unfortunately, until the last few weeks, having an opportunity against Samoa Joe and maybe even throwing Powerhouse Hobbs into the mix. And the arrow all of a sudden creatively, especially with the return of the House of Black, is now pointing up.
Yeah, exactly. You're right. And of course, to keep it that in that direction, it's going to take some chicanery and some creativity. And we'll see, obviously, as the weeks go on, whether that's available or whether it's non-existent. You know, but that does remain to be seen.
And we'll be here to see it.
So yeah, I hope.
we'll get ready to see more of it after this weekend. As we begin to wind down this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly, you referenced HWA and some other stuff earlier in the program, Les. There are plenty of great HWA DVDs with lots of previously hard-to-find footage that anyone who is a true fan of professional wrestling would really covet, especially the opportunity to see some of their favorites very early on in their career.
Yeah, real quick, I want to say, too, if you're going to watch some HWA, my dear friend Jamie Noble is coming back. He hasn't wrestled in, how many years it's been. He's been a producer behind the scenes in WWE, and I'm going to tell you, one of the best damn talents I've ever worked with, and a hell of a hard charger, a hell of a worker. Anyway, in West Virginia, he is going to wrestle one more match. It's probably going to be his last match. I don't know against who, but if you're in the area, you see it advertised, go out and support Jamie because he deserves it. He's a smaller version of Chris Benoit when it comes to that ring, and that's a fact. So, yeah, okay. Yes, if you would like to see some wrestling from the heartland, the Lost Developmental Tapes, Volumes 1 and 2, over 6 hours of content. Both are two DVD sets. Joe Dombrowski and I do the voiceover on those, and you can get a copy of those at either joe-dombrowski.com or the prowrestlinglibrary.com. And also the Brian Pillman Shows Anthology, the 20-year anniversary. It's a four DVD set with over 15 hours of content, all four of the shows from 98, 99, 2000, 2001, and the matches, interviews, awards, extras, running out your ears, and you can get that at PillmanShows.com or the two addresses I mentioned earlier, Joe-Dombrowski.com or ProWrestlingLibrary.com, and also at the PillmanShows.com. You click on there, you'll find my name in the about, and there's some magazines and stuff, and Joe's putting together some historical stuff for me on there as well. And I guess we need to mention T-shirts. The first ever pro wrestling T-shirt on the market was the Briscoe Booster shirt, which was put out by Jack, Jerry, and myself back in 1972, artwork by Jerry the King Lawler. And you can get that at Pro Wrestling Tees, as well as a I'm a Les Thatcher guy if you happen to be one. And I hope everyone had a great Thanksgiving. I hope if you traveled, your travels were safe. And we will be back at the same lemonade stand a week from today, as far as I can tell.
I'd like a little more than a nickel for my glass of lemonade, though.
yeah, we're selling for a lot more money than that.
So we're wrapping up this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. He's the legend Les Thatcher. My name is Victor Sosa. Thank you so much for taking time out of your weekend to spend some of it here with us. And we will talk to you again next week.